Live from the Hanania studio, this is Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express.
Blaine will start at quarterback, and we're excited about the opportunity for him. Both he and Chad, though, will get ample time with the first group. We do have it set up with our offensive line. He's going to go for quite a while, first group offensive line, and receivers, too, to give him ample opportunity to both get playing time with them.
We're looking ahead to the next Jaguars game with Brian Sexton and former Jaguars Jeff Loggeman, Tony Baselli, and Mark Brunell. Sponsored by EverBank. Jaguars Thursday begins right now.
Welcome inside the Hanania studio for Jaguars Thursday here on News Talk WOKV, now on 104.5 FM and on AM 690. The Metro PCS call-in lines are open. 800-355-NFL1 or 355-6351. Jeff Loggeman is here. Tony Baselli is here. Mark Brunell is here. And, you know, just thinking about this week, Mark, I thought we were going to go right to the quarterback, the big decision, you know, not ready to go. And then this whole thing with ESPN popped up and the two television critics wanted to jump you.
Oh, they did.
They at least wanted to have their say.
We'll have at it.
First of all,
let's go.
Congratulations.
Thank you, Brian.
About the gig.
Comments?
I have nothing to say. Good for you.
I think it's great.
I think it's great.
Yeah, and here, two reasons why. One, I think it's great for you.
It's good for the Jaguars.
And number two, it is great for the Jaguars because, you know, when you go across ESPN, you see a lot of teams getting exposure because of a former player is on that channel. Hey, look, ESPN is king of sports. And so to get a Jacksonville Jaguar amongst them, that's fantastic.
So what are you going to do when you do it?
Well, first of all, I'm thrilled about the opportunity. It's they expressed some interest a few weeks ago, and they called and said, hey, we're interested in having you as an NFL analyst, and you know, we want you to come up to Bristol periodically. And I said, I'm interested, guys, but I've got a job. And so we discussed it, and we came to the agreement that none of that, the opportunity with ESPN, doesn't start until after the Episcopal football season gets over. So that was perfect. I'm thrilled about that, and looking forward to it. But my commitment, my focus is with Episcopal. It's with the students. It's with the football team, and so
it
just really students? Really fits.
You're not teaching my student
my
athlete
football
stuff.
Players. All you are care students.
About is, all you care about is football.
That's not true.
You're full of it.
So opening night. When are you going to start? I mean,
November.
I know, but as soon as Episcopal ends,
yeah,
which is when?
I think our last game is November 8th.
The last scheduled game.
Scheduled game. We beat Providence. We'll be in the playoffs, and so that ESPN will have to start a little later.
Okay, and so then it will start after that.
Yes.
And how many year deal?
You know what? It's not a. It's per show.
Okay.
It's not a yearly contract or no long term commitment. And so it's
kind of a little trial period then. That's good.
Yeah, I think so. And obviously both parties have to be interested. You know, it has to be something I enjoy and something that you know, I want to continue to be a part of. But it's a great opportunity. It's
awesome.
And I'm excited about it. So it will begin after the football season.
All right.
Great. Yeah.
Plus the opening night tomorrow night for the Episcopal Eagles.
That's right.
And Providence tomorrow
right
night?
Right now. No, I'm missing it.
Come on, really?
They kicked off 6 minutes ago.
And who are they playing?
Clay High.
Okay. In Clay? Or
no, in wow. Right there on Hodges.
Now, that's okay. Commitment to the radio show right there.
I'm committed to the Jacksonville Jaguars.
You're committed to Tony Baselli.
That's not true. Well, that's secondary.
All right.
After the Jaguars.
Then we get to the real meat of the week. And on Monday, it was, you know, one of those unusual press conferences because you are told – Blaine Gabbert is the starting quarterback, but he won't be ready to go until the start of the regular season. Not going to play the two final preseason games. So, you know, thoughts on Blaine getting the job? I mean, it's no surprise you guys have been saying it would happen all the way around. The timing of the announcement, the thumb, whatever is on your mind.
Well, I thought
I thought the quarterback would start.
Here we go. I will start. The timing is perfect.
I mean, he just got done talking.
It answers the question that has been on everybody's minds for months. We know who our starting quarterback is. Let's go forward, and it's the right decision. I think we all knew it was coming. And Blaine, you know, nothing is given to you. You earn a starting spot. And Blaine played very well in the Jets game. He's had a good camp. Obviously, the first preseason game, they weren't. You know, nobody was really thrilled about the numbers, but he threw 10 times. So it's the right decision. They can go forward. Unfortunately, he doesn't get the reps versus the Eagles. But he's the guy that needs to be starting, and he'll do well.
Well, I mean, I think we all thought it was going to be his job opening day. I think the timing was right on by Gus Bradley. I think it's the right move. Now this team knows who the leader of the offense is going to be, who the guy is going to be in that huddle. And doing it at the same time of announcing that he's going to miss the rest of the preseason, very smart as well, because
that might have accelerated the announcement.
I don't think so. I think that was coming no matter what. Who knows?
Never know.
My opinion. But they now, no matter, listen, because if you don't do it and you know that's who you want to start week one, and then Chad comes out and throws, you know, for 300 yards and has a great game, well, now all of a sudden, at least outside this building, everyone's talking about quarterback, you know, controversy, you know, Henny should be the starter, should it be Gabbert? Gus has put that to bed. This team knows, everyone knows, this is our guy, and this is who we're going with. This is who we're going to go with this season, and the way he communicates, this is our conviction, and we're going to ride with Blaine Gabbert starting the opening day.
2 points to make. One, the competition is not over, because it's not like Blaine has this track record to say, this is what I've been, this is what I'm going to be if I have 4 or 5 bad games. So in reality, the competition is not even close to being ended for him. And number two,
I don't know if I agree with that.
I wonder if he can even be ready for week one. I mean, we're not talking about a lineman that had a hairline fracture in his thumb, put some tape on it, and get back in the game. We're talking about a precision instrument, which is the thumb on the throwing hand. Have you ever had that, Mark?
I have.
Broken thumb.
Not broken sprained, but I've had a couple broken index fingers on the throwing hand.
And I mean that, it's like when you look at Major League Baseball.
Well, baseball players aren't tough though. I mean, come on.
But if they, I mean, either quarterbacks. But I mean, that's why I draw the comparison, because I think quarterbacks and baseball players are in the same category.
He played with broken fingers.
When a pitcher, and I very similar. When a pitcher has a hangnail, sometimes he goes on the DL.
Again.
Am I right?
Yeah, you're saying it makes it tough to throw.
Yeah, just because, okay. I mean, we're talking about a precision instrument.
You play D-line. Let's ask the quarterback.
That's what I was doing.
This is the issue. If it's a grip issue, can he hold on to the ball? And it's a pain issue. It's going to be sore. How much is it going to hurt him? How much is it going to affect him? Obviously, the doctors and the coaches, Blaine, they feel comfortable enough to think that he's going to be fine week one. If they didn't, I don't think they announced Blaine Gabbert as the starter. So you know, I think he's going to be fine. I think everyone inside this building thinks he's going to be fine, and so he's got 2 weeks to get there, and he'll get there.
Although, you know, I have heard it said, Gus just said it on the air, that they were talking about Chad, and he said, you know, and in case, you know, just leaving it out there, the just in case that he's not ready to go. So, you know, I mean, the thumb is so critical to throwing the ball, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I mean,
Jeff nailed it.
Right.
No question. No question. And
but you were able to play with the sprained thumb.
Yeah. I mean, by the time I got on the field, I mean, it wasn't a, you know, second, third degree sprain, but I mean, it was sprained. But if you can't grip the ball.
Right.
You know, and it's not something you shoot up.
You got to feel it.
You've got to feel it. You've got to be able to feel the ball in your hand.
Hey, when you got to throw the ball 40 yards down the field in a window about the size of, you know, a basketball hoop, I mean, one little thing can throw that off.
And you know what? And another thing, too, is that you do not want that thumb taped up, you know?
Why?
You don't. I mean.
It's not natural.
It's not natural. It doesn't feel right. I tried to do it when I had my thumb sprained years ago. It just doesn't feel right.
Now, over the last couple years, you've seen some quarterbacks go to the glove. Could a glove help that grip issue?
If he's comfortable with a glove, if he's thrown with a glove, yes. Some quarterbacks, Tom Brady, I think he throws with a glove more than he does.
And the reason I bring it up, you know, Peyton Manning, when he had weakness in his grip, for the last couple years, he's been wearing a glove. And he's kind of stuck with it, I think, for the most part, at times. For a while, he did, because I think he said that he thought it helped his grip.
Yeah, I can see that. You know, typically, years ago, the only time the gloves would come out on a throwing hand was when it was cold.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that was a grip issue also. But if, you know, I don't know if Blaine's working on that at all, if he thinks that might be something he needs on opening day. But if he's not a guy that is comfortable throwing with a glove, he shouldn't have it on game day.
355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351 of the Metro PCS call-in line. Let's grab Bill, who joins us from the South Side. Hello, Bill. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Listen, I wanted to tell Mark. Hello there.
Hey, Bill.
How you doing? I hope you keep your headquarters here in town. I mean, you know, you got to look at all the different things, like no matter where you came from or where you're going, I don't think anybody's going to love you more than we do here.
Well, I hope
I
he
appreciate
leaves.
That.
No,
huh?
I hope he moves.
Oh, no, come on, Tony. Hey, listen, you know, you got to think of all these things like no personal income tax in Florida and all this kind of other stuff.
Here's the question.
I'm not going anywhere. No, this is home, Bill. I'm not going anywhere.
All right, here's the question I have. Will you be coaching at Episcopal next year?
I plan to. Absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
The question is, after this year, do they want him?
Coming from a guy that's got a shirt on with a big P on the left side there. I think, is that Providence?
It is.
Yeah.
You can go long in the fuel-efficient Ford Fusion. See your Southern Ford
transition.
Dealer today. A proud sponsor of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Ford, go further. Yeah, we were getting you out of there. No way about it. When we come back, we will take your calls, questions, and comments. We're talking about the Jaguars' offense. Cecil Shorts returns to the field with Justin Blackmon for Chad Henne on Saturday night, 4:30 for the Publix Tailgate Show right here on News Talk WOKV. We'll take this break and return. Jaguars Thursday, Jaguars Radio, right after this. Well, this portion of Jaguars Thursday is brought to you by Fanatics.com. Brian Sexton, Jeff Loggeman, Tony Boselli, Mark Brunel here. We'll take your calls, 355-NFL-1-800-355-6351. So last week, Blaine Gabbert gets Maurice Jones-Drew and Justin Blackmon back, and we saw the results. The offense right down the field looked terrific. This week, Cecil Shorts returns. So Cecil, Ace Sanders, Denard Robinson, Maurice Jones-Drew, Justin Blackmon, no Blaine.
I mean, and no Mercedes.
And no Mercedes this week.
And Luke's questionable.
Potentially. So they just can't get all the pieces together here to see how it might fit.
Which is unfortunate for week three of preseason.
Yeah.
Because this is the week you want all the weapons out there. You want the team intact, and it's frustrating.
Especially for a team with a new offensive coordinator and a young team. I mean, so now you're looking at in reality, you're not going to have your first unit full go on the field together until opening day against Kansas City.
You know, out of all them, the one I think that is the most disappointing, besides the quarterback, because that's the one always want to get the reps, it's Luke Jokel. I mean, a rookie, and I'm not disappointed in him because, I mean, something that you can't control. But you're talking a rookie, even though he's a high pick, but he's a rookie that's not getting the reps, and it kind of reminds me of back to 1995 when some other guy was milking a knee injury to get out of preseason.
For weeks.
You remember
surgery?
That, Mark?
I do.
I mean,
I do.
It worked the world.
It worked all right for him, though. It was okay first game.
Got back in week four and had Sean Jones waiting for him.
Yeah, it was fine. But now we want to make sure everyone knows there's a chance Luke's playing this week. I mean, we won't know that because in the preseason, teams don't have to disclose injury or
he's game time decision.
I mean, so we'll know, you know, when they kick it off. But
yeah, but you know what I mean?
I wouldn't be surprised.
To really go into a preseason game having a high first-round pick being a game-time decision.
If he's ready to go, play
he's
him.
He's not playing.
I disagree. I mean, I don't know, but why not? I talked to him last week on the field, and he said he was feeling good. Now, maybe who knows what happened to practice this week.
But it's preseason.
Yeah, but he's still a rookie, and you want the reps, even if you get him in there for a quarter. I'm not saying you play him the whole first.
Yeah, but has he practiced this week?
Right? I'm just telling you.
I mean,
you
today know. Was the first day he was back, and
it
was
obviously not a glorified walkthrough.
Right, it was a
I understand that, but I'm saying if he is healthy, now if he's not healthy, you don't play him. I agree with that 100%. But if he is 100% healthy and ready to go and feels good, play him a quarter.
I disagree.
If he's not practicing, he would not play.
What's Gus's philosophy with respect to the preseason? Are his starters done on Saturday night, or will some of them work on the Thursday game next week?
Oh, I gotta believe they're gonna play Thursday night against Atlanta. I mean, this is a young team, new defense, new offense. I mean, you need reps.
I'd say quarter at the most.
At the most in Atlanta, I think in this, you know, obviously he's talked. I think possibly going in the second half.
Well, I mean, you know,
this game, but next week in Atlanta, short week. Hey, look, this is not exactly a deep roster anyway. I mean, so any injury that you would have is going to amplify the damage to this roster.
It's just
why risk it?
Perfect.
Because you know what? Hey, Atlanta's not going to play anybody.
Well,
that's
but Atlanta's
that's
coming
it.
Off the AFC, NFC title game and is a veteran team that's all back together. I mean, they have been there. They've had the success. I think.
So what benefit do you get from playing your starters
reps.
Against a team that's not going to play
reps.
Theirs?
Young players need reps. I'm not saying I play MJD. Maybe you take Meester and Paz and some of the older guys that you know you're confident. But these young guys in the new system, I'd play them. I'm not saying I play them a bunch, but I play them a couple series.
Jokel in particular is where
yeah,
I was
absolutely.
Going with that one.
Absolutely.
Especially after missing the time.
There's not a doubt in my mind I'd play him.
And Justin Blackmon? Final,
yes, without
final
a doubt, because he's going to be off for 4 weeks. I'll probably play Cecil a little bit too. I mean, depending on how tomorrow night goes. I mean, just to get the reps. Now.
Yeah, see, I disagree with you on Cecil.
Oh, yeah, I was going to backtrack because Blaine's not going to be out there, so your timing's not going to be there. So what's the point?
And he's a fantastic practice
I agree
player.
I agree with you there. I was wrong on
Blackmon,
that.
Yes. Cyprian, yes.
I play Grotz. I play all those
Grotz,
guys.
Grotz, yes.
I mean, there's only a few guys. I mean, you probably don't need to play Babin. And we're jumping ahead because these guys are going to get a lot of time next week. But some of your veteran guys that – you know or you're confident are going to be ready to strap it up week one. Yeah, I mean, fine. Week four is not a big deal. But this team's full of young guys, and they got to get reps.
I think one of the discussion topics that we need to have is special teams hasn't been exactly stellar in the last couple games. And I believe there's a reason why.
Why?
The roster.
The depth?
Yeah. May I mention it to Gus, and obviously he doesn't want to, you know, he's going to play it a certain way with his commentary, and I get that. But when you have a second-round pick, a third-round pick, and a fourth-round pick having to be starters, instead of being backups learning their way or earning their way to a starting spot, it means that the next level are undrafted guys, street free agents, that's your core special teams player. You know, not as good as if Grotz and Cyprian and all those guys were on your special teams. You know, this roster is going to take some time to where you get to the point where those draft picks aren't inserted into the lineup, you know, from day one of camp.
Well, that's why, and we've talked about this off the air, I think as many as 10 guys – are in other camps right now that'll be here opening day.
I don't think it's that many, but I know where I agree with you.
I mean, that'd be high.
And that it's going to be there's going to be five.
I was going to say if we were going to over under, five is the over under of where it's at. But I could see as many as 10. Now that'd be high, but at least five are going to be. There's five guys at least that are suited up in different uniforms this weekend that will be on this team.
I'm guessing here, but I bet that David Caldwell and Chris Polian have been having a lot of discussion. Chris Polian being the pro personnel guy, been having a lot of conversation and have been monitoring other teams and other rosters from, and probably started a while ago, because they've identified certain teams that are heavy at certain positions to where they've targeted them to watch their waiver wire and when the opportunity comes. Because the opportunity is good for this football team. What? Second in waiver wire
right.
acquisition order, pecking order. So Kansas City's got first option. And I think they're pretty, I don't want to say set.
They've got a stronger roster
than this one. But they feel
one.
Better about their roster. And this is a team that's going to be looking real hard at a lot of different teams' cuts.
Are there position groups where you would say they wouldn't be? Or would you say every position group on this roster could be liable to have a roster move after the final cut?
I think the only position group that probably has the most depth where you could see a surprise is at the defensive tackle. I mean,
yeah, I think they're good there.
They're good there. And so when I say surprise, you could have a surprise cut, like, oh, that's a good player that someone else would be willing to pick up. But there's not a lot of depth. I mean, you go
– tight end could be a spot. Offensive line could be a spot.
Linebacker, corner.
A fourth wide receiver could be one that could contribute on special teams. I think fullback, I think they're going to end up with maybe one on the roster. defensively, the edge rusher, I think, is going to be a huge factor. And if they can find a guy who is an edge rusher slash linebacker, that would be, you know. And in fact, I don't know if you guys watched HBO's Hard Knocks this week, Aaron Maben. I was kind of curious about that cut. You know, former high pick of the Buffalo
Bills.
Yeah, but
he's never done it.
No, I know he hasn't. I know he hasn't.
New York with the Jets.
I know he hasn't.
Been in Cincy.
But you're talking about a guy who's athletic, who plays linebacker, which is a position they obviously, I think, would be very interested in taking a look at depth there. And he's also an edge rusher.
Yeah, he can't play. I don't think he can play linebacker, Jeff. I don't think he's a guy.
You wouldn't need him to play linebacker. You know what you'd need him to do? To come here and play special teams?
Right.
And maybe give you an occasional edge rush and learn linebacker along the way.
And I'm not saying that he's not a guy they would look at, but, I mean, he's a guy who's bounced around and can't make a team.
No, I know. But, you know, he's a former first-round pick. You never know.
Well, since you're there, how about Andre Branch? I mean, he's a guy that right now is sitting, you know, precariously close to the edge of the roster for a guy that was picked as high as he was last year. Now, the one thing you would think he could do is give you special teams. Does special teams save his roster spot?
I don't know. And, Jeff, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't recall him making an impact in special teams.
I watched the film of him on special teams, and it left a lot to be desired.
Oh, so he's even pushed himself closer to the bubble.
And if you're not a starter at that Leo position, which is supposed to be that hybrid position, you got to contribute on special teams because you're, in essence, a linebacker when it comes to a roster evaluation because you got to contribute on special teams. The one thing that Andre, I think, has trouble with, from my opinion, I don't think he plays with great knee bend. I don't think he has a lot of explosive power that is at a lower level. He's a little bit tall at times. He's got great get-off. He goes hard. But, hey, he's got a lot to prove. You know, he hadn't done anything yet.
And don't forget, this staff did not make him the second pick.
No.
Second round pick.
No, I understand, which is why I say he could be on the bubble. But you're talking about Aaron Maben, who's been with three teams after being a top selection. And now we're looking at a guy on the Jaguars roster. And, you know, he's got the body to be able to compete on special teams. He's long.
If
he's
could
athletic.
Just play with better knee bend.
But can you teach someone to do that?
No.
Yeah.
No.
So that's why he wasn't a top pick.
Maybe.
Yeah, that means why he was a second round pick, perhaps, because he didn't have that special quality.
You know, but and maybe the light comes on for him to where it starts to happen. But typically, for the most part, you either have that or you don't.
Do you look at a roster that's as thin as this one is in the first year of this building process, and you look at a guy like that and say, well, let's just keep him because, you know, you don't find guys that are built like that, and he's still young and we can develop him, or do you say, hey, he can't play with knees bend, doesn't help on special teams, see you later?
You keep him only if he can contribute. I mean, if he's one of your best 53. If he's not one of your best 53 or one of your best, they'll probably keep 10, 11, 9 to 11 defensive linemen, including tackles and ends.
Yeah, I think no more than 9. I mean, you got to have a reason to make it more than 9.
Right, but high end's 11, low end's 9. And so if he's not in that group?
The low end could be 8.
I don't know if you go 8 on the defensive line in today's football the way you rotate guys. I mean, more eight offensive linemen, you're seeing more and more teams carry more defensive linemen because of the rotations. I mean, Jeff, I mean, for most of your career, until later in your career, I mean, if you played defensive end, you played every snap.
Yeah.
And now in today's football, you rotate series and, I mean, situational, and they keep guys fresh, so it's different. So you see teams keeping more guys on the roster, more guys on game day active. I'm not keeping a guy because I hope he can be something if I haven't seen it. And but now on this roster, he might be one of the best 53.
Well, that's what I'm saying is that it would seem in a thin roster like this, you might keep him until something else pops up.
Well, listen, I'm telling you, there's 5 to 10 guys that are on this team right now that might make it for one day or 1 week, and then they're going to see what's out there, and they're going to start churning and finding guys. And I think we will see throughout the year the bottom of this roster changing on a I don't know if regular.
I don't want to say it's going to be a revolving door,
but it's going to be it's going to be fluid.
Yes. That would be a good way to describe it.
And the reason why they might be on the roster for 1 week is because a vested veteran on the opening day roster counts for his entire season salary.
He guaranteed that money.
Exactly. So the Jaguars may have their eyes on some guys, but they won't bring him in until after the Kansas City game when they can release them week to week without having that hit
possibly,
on the salary cap.
Possibly. Very good money management there, Brian.
Well, I figured that out over the years. You're pretty good with your money. I've just followed you, big boy. We'll take a break. Fans, nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate today. News is next on News Talk WOKV. Then 30 more minutes of Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the Hanania Studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
You can join us 355-NFL-1 on the Metro PCS call-in lines. If you're from Spokane, Washington, like Jake, it's 800-355-6351. Hey, Jake, how are you tonight?
Good, Brian. Tony, Jeff, Mark, how you guys doing?
Good, good. Jake. This isn't Jake from State Farm, is it?
What are you wearing,
Jake? I'm wearing khaki right now. Yeah, I'm wearing khaki.
Good call, Jake. See, we all wanted you on. There's one person who didn't.
You sound hideous.
Thanks. I appreciate that, Brian.
And it wasn't me.
That was Mark.
Good call. What's up, Jake?
So I wanted to talk to Mark. Mark, how are you doing today?
Good, Jake.
Good. So, Mark, anyway, I just have a couple questions for you, but first, before I ask you that, I just want to say thank you, because as a man who's lived in the state of Washington my entire life, I am a huge UW fan. Because you went to UW and had a good NFL career, you're basically the entire reason why I'm a huge Jaguars fan. So,
oh, cool. Thank you.
I had good memories, and it was fun to watch you play, and my questions are, real quick, number one, are you still somewhat involved at the University of Washington? And number two, there's a certain play that I'm never going to forget you were a part of. I believe it was in 1999. You guys went to Cleveland, and you went on, like, I think you went on a naked bootleg or something like that, and you, like, leaped into the end zone. A guy, like, undercut you, and you went down on your head or something like that. I don't know if you remember that, but I just was thinking that was the coolest thing I've ever seen. I just wanted to know if you could take me through that play, if you even remember it.
Yeah, answer your first question.
He's
am
not
still
sensitive
involved
to concussions.
No, no, I am still involved with the with Washington, and to answer your second question, I do remember that play, and what jumps out at me was coming back to the sidelines after that play, and Tom Coughlin giving me the dirtiest look, like, "What are you doing?
Are you an idiot?
Are you what are you doing?" And I think I just, you know, Coach, we scored, and all just right. Shook his head, and but yeah, it was pretty cool. Yeah, I'm glad you remember that.
355-NFL-1, 800-355-6351.
For some reason, Coughlin always had that look for you.
Yeah, it came my way once or twice.
I never figured that out.
No.
It's kind of a mystery there.
We can solve it at another time.
Hey, let's talk a little bit about the Eagles that are coming in here. I mean, it's been a big story since Chip Kelly left the University of Oregon, where he had the most up-tempo offense college football knew. You know, 44.7 points a game, 220 plays, pass plays of over 25 yards, 110 running plays over 25 yards over his 4 years there. I mean, just up-tempo, explosive all the way. Now he takes it to the NFL. Will it work?
Well, you know what? I mean, in the preseason, averaging over 426 yards a game. Of course, they've got some pretty good quarterback play. But this offense, if this were 10 years ago and Chip Kelly had Michael Vick in his prime, it would be scary to no end. I mean, scary. Because one of the reasons why this offense has worked at the college level is that you factor in an extra ball carry with the quarterback's ability to run. And it stresses linebackers. It stresses defensive ends. So you don't know who's going to get the ball. Is it the running back? Is it the quarterback? Or is the quarterback going to keep the ball, fake a run, and step back two steps and throw the ball down the field?
Yeah, I don't know. Listen, the numbers are impressive. I'm not convinced it's going to work. I mean, listen, he's a good coach. Let's put that to bed. But no one's game planning for it. No one's seen it, which all changes after the preseason. All of a sudden, week one, got some film. They're going to game plan it. They're going to have a plan of attack, how to take certain things away. And I think we've seen where if your quarterback is one of your main runners, that doesn't last very long. and it doesn't work very well over the long haul. And so while that's nice in college, and he was outstanding, it was explosive, it was fun to watch unless he was playing my USC Trojans. I just – guys, I'm not convinced.
Wait a minute, weren't they the conference champions for like 4 years in a row?
No, they're a great team. No, absolutely. I'm not saying that. He's an outstanding coach. I don't think that translates the way it's not going to translate to what you saw in college to the pro game because of the game planning, the fact that you cannot run your quarterback like
and
that.
Do you know,
he cannot take the hits.
The story out of Philadelphia today is that he's added, he being Michael Vick, has gone up to 222, added muscle because he intends at 33 to run. To run like he did in 06 when he ran for 1,039 yards. He's all excited about playing in this offense because he says he wants to run again. He wants to be creative. In fact, he even says he did a 40 against LeSean McCoy.
Oh, he can fly still.
Beat him, and so he's ready to run like he hasn't in years.
Until he gets hit right in the mouth.
Well, he's broken ribs.
By DeMarcus Ware.
Yeah, I mean, broken ribs the last couple years have really slowed down. He missed 12 of 37 starts.
He has played 16 games one time in his entire
that
career.
That 1 year where he ran for 1,009 yards.
So maybe that's why they're going to go with a three-quarterback roster.
Must be.
Because they might end up needing it.
You saw the film. Is Nick Foles going to be that explosive runner out of the backfield?
Here's the funny thing. Can you imagine
Matt Barkley?
Tom Brady or Peyton Manning running the spread offense like Tim Tebow used to run at Florida? Can either of you guys picture that?
No.
That's what Nick Foles brings to the table.
And your third quarterback's Matt Barkley, and I watched every game of his college career, and he is not the most fleet of foot himself.
The only thing that's going to make this work is Michael Vick. I mean, even after 12 years, he can still run, and he's the guy. It'll be interesting to see. But
I mean, I wish him the best, but he's never finished the season except for one time.
That 1 year, by the way, that he ran for more than 1,000 yards was the only time he finished it. But he's 33, and he's missed a lot of games with broken ribs, for goodness sakes. It's awful difficult to think that he would be able to finish it, but that's the story.
Well, I got to give your guy Barkley a little credit. In last week's game against the Carolina Panthers, he looked good.
No, he's a good player. I mean, I was shocked that I didn't think he was going to be a first-rounder. But going in the fourth round like he did, I thought – I was shocked he went that far. I think he's going to be – I don't know if he's going to be a great pro, but I think he's –
Yeah, I don't know.
I think he's going to be a good pro.
I don't think his arm's good enough to be great.
But we've seen plenty of quarterbacks without great arms. I mean
– No, I know.
He played with a guy in Drew Brees that does not have a great arm. No. Peyton Manning does not have a great arm. Heck, he had a weak arm last year and was one of the best quarterbacks
last
in the NFL.
Last year, but early on in his career, he had a really nice arm.
I know, but he's succeeded over the life of his career without a great arm. And there's a lot of guys. I mean, Matt Ryan has a good arm. It's not a great arm. I mean, so I think more about being a great quarterback, and I want to hear what Mark says about this, is being an accurate passer, being able to throw on time and make decisions, anticipate, and throw into those small windows that you talked about.
Yeah, and Mark, watching Michael Vick throw the ball, I mean, is it just me? I mean, I'm not a quarterback expert. I only play one on TV. That guy has the quickest whippy motion that gets velocity and accuracy like nobody else.
Well, he can sling it. There's no question. I think the question is, particularly in this offense, he's going to run the ball, but it's his decision-making has not always been great. I mean, 12-year vet, great career, multiple Pro Bowls and all that. But, I don't know. I think a smart coach, and you've got the looking at this depth of this these quarterbacks here, the system has to fit who you have. I don't think you can put Nick Foles into this system and be successful. I mean, they're going to have to find a way. Now, when Michael's in, they're going to run it. Nick's not running the football.
No.
Matt Barkley's not going to run it. Maybe a little bit. But certainly not Michael Vick. That's why he's the starter, and that's what's going to make that work. The only thing that's going to make it work is Mike's ability to run the ball.
His threat to run the ball will make that offense go.
That's it, and that's the only thing for the Eagles this year.
Because if you're facing the Eagles and they've got Nick Foles or Barkley at quarterback, if he's sticking that ball out to where the option is he can keep it or he can hand it off, do you think the opponent's going to be worried about the quarterback keeping the ball and running?
How did a quarterback running work out for RG3?
Not real well at the end of the year.
No, not at all.
Wear and tear, guys. I don't see it happening.
Listen, defensive coordinators right now, they've done all the film study. They've been to the clinics. That's all they've been talking about, preparing for this Eagles offense. The number one thing that they need to do is hit the quarterback, whether it's Michael or Nick or Matt Barkley, get after that quarterback. Make it so he doesn't want to run. And that's That's the key.
The nice thing about this preseason matchup, I mean, it's great exposure for the Jaguars, you know, because they're going to play the 49ers, right? Colin Kaepernick.
You bet. They're going to play
Seattle and Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson, they both run it. And also, it's not like they haven't seen any reps. I mean, we've seen in training camp where you get Denard Robinson back there and shotgun, and they run some of those principles in practice. So it's going to be a fun night to watch them.
I'll say this. If I'm a defense coordinator facing an offense like this or any of these read options, first quarter, I tell my guys, you get 15-yard penalty for a late hit, that's on me. I'll take my chances.
You'll pay the fine too?
I'm not saying hit him in the head. I mean, you can, if he's a runner and faking the option, you can hit him like a runner, meaning you can hit him in the head. I'm saying if you're a step late, yeah, we'll take the 15 early.
All right, we need a break. We'll take it now.
Can't
one more segment.
Sully's promoting illegal play.
I'm not promoting. I'll just say, yeah, it's borderline.
Take
the shot.
It's borderline. Take the shot. That's illegal play.
It's not illegal. It's borderline.
Gray area. We're back after this on Jaguars Radio.
From just inside the 10, they'll go to an I formation. Tight end right, two wide receivers. Brown shifting around. The defensive front, McCardell goes in motion from right to left. Brunell, play action, rolling out to his left. Looking. He's got room to run. 10, 5, Brunell leaps. Touchdown, Jacksonville. Mark Brunell's first rushing touchdown since December the 14th, 1997. And Jacksonville grabs a 13-0 lead. How about Mark Brunell going airborne?
I remember that play. It was across the field to my right at the new Cleveland Browns Stadium, and I remember thinking, I wonder if he's going to remember it.
What year was that?
1999.
Well, what happened between the last time in 97 to 99?
Fred Taylor.
98, he wasn't very good.
Fred Taylor. Yeah. Fred Taylor.
There's your answer.
He was throwing it more.
Does that make me a quarterback apologist?
Ooh.
No, you're good.
Okay, Fred Taylor. Fred had a lot to do with how few rushing touchdowns you got.
No question.
After 1997.
Which I'm sure was just fine by you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Jaguars, Eagles. Dare I mention this is Riley Cooper's first road trip?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, you know.
He's lucky. He's coming to Florida. He's coming to, you know, his backyard, essentially.
Yeah. Watching the film this week, you know, I actually kind of wanted to see from the all-22 shot, you know, how Riley Cooper got treated, you know, when he was blocking or he was around a pile. And I didn't notice anything that was dirty on Riley Cooper.
But you were looking for it.
But I did notice that that there was some engagement going on, probably a little bit longer than normal from the defensive player.
I imagine he can expect that for a while.
Sure. And this being his first road trip, you know, hey, you know what would be worse? If somebody from another market did what he did and had to go to Philly for the first road game.
That'd be ugly.
Yeah, that would be something to pay attention to.
I
noticed that it was here, obviously, first road trip in his backyard. Good opportunity. Let's grab a phone call. 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. And Leo joins us from the beach. Hello, Leo.
Hello, gang.
What's happening, Leo?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
My question to everyone is, I know y'all were satisfied with Blaine Gabbert's performance, but what specifically you were satisfied with as far as, was it his performance itself or just the offense that he ran that seemed like it fit him better?
All of the above.
If you looked at this competition, I mean, I've been saying all along, I mean, and you guys agree, that the arm talent is not a contest. You know, Blaine can make, and if you looked at just that one game, the game in New York against the Jets, and you watch Blaine Gabbert and you watch Chad Henne, it's not even close. The ball's out faster. It's got better velocity. It's more accurate. The ball spins tighter. And I thought that game was probably more dramatic difference-wise than maybe other games. Am I wrong?
No, he's a great athlete. He can move. Jed Fish, offensive coordinator, likes moving the pocket, nakeds, you know, rollouts and everything else that fits Blaine's athletic ability. And he has all the talent, like you said, Jeff, as far as arm strength and accurate and everything else. All we've been saying all along is we just got to see it on a consistent basis. He did it in New York. It's unfortunate we can't see it for the rest of the preseason. But we'll see whether he can build on it come the regular season. We all think he can, and he's going to have an opportunity to be the starter.
And, Tony, that's the key, is the consistency. You've got to be able to do it week in and week out. He doesn't have to be perfect. He doesn't have to throw for 400 yards, four touchdowns a game. He can't make the mistakes, and when the game's on the line, that's where we see, you know, how our quarterback is. That's where we find out, you know, what Blaine Gabbert is all about. And obviously Jed Fish and Gus Bradley, the coaching staff, they've got confidence in him to get it done. So we've said all along, this is a huge year for Blaine Gabbert. He needs to start well. He needs to make good decisions. But he certainly has all the tools. There's no question.
If he becomes that guy, think about how much farther along this franchise is if he's not.
This season comes down to quarterback play. It does.
Every season does.
Well, of course. But this without a doubt.
But this is a franchise-defining year.
Absolutely. No question.
You know, can you make next year's draft and free agency focused in on building the rest of the team, or is the offseason going to be about, boy, we got to still find a guy? I mean, you're talking about a huge, huge difference.
Well, I don't know if it's franchise-defining. What it defines is what you do in the draft next year.
The quarterback defines a franchise.
I understand that, but it boils down to one thing. It defines what you do at the top of the draft next year. If Blaine comes out and builds on what he did against the Jets and shows that for the entire season and has a good year, then you're confident that that's the guy we're going to build around. If not, you got to go draft a guy in the first round.
Yeah, but
it comes down to that. That is what, as far as the quarterback play.
And then how many years does it take you to evaluate the next one?
Well, it took
four years, right?
No, that's not true. It took the Colts 1 year. It took the Seahawks 1 year.
Yeah,
that's really rare.
Well,
rare? It took the Bengals 1 year. It took the Panthers 1 year. It took the Redskins 1 year. Seattle Seahawks 1 year. It took the San Francisco 49ers 2 years.
I disagree with you.
But I just think last year,
what do you mean
while
you
there's
disagree
some good
with
ones.
Me?
I mean,
it took Pittsburgh 1 year. I mean, he's been the guy since the beginning. Eli Manning, he's been the guy since the first year.
But some
I mean,
of those guys Phillip that Rivers, you're I mean, talking about went into programs that had top of the rankings defenses, a lot of talent around them. Some of them didn't. Some of them did not. Now, I still say that the book is not closed on Cam Newton. Somebody, you can't tell me that Cam Newton is clearly the guy, a franchise guy.
He's the guy in Carolina. He's the guy they're building that team around.
They are. But
he had a great rookie year.
Is he going to be the franchise-type guy?
Well, yeah, right now, yes, he is the franchise.
No way.
They're not going into next year's draft looking for a quarterback. They didn't come to this year's draft. They knew after about five games that this is the guy that we're going to build around. And that's what they've been doing. I'm not saying 3 years from now. Who knows what happens? I mean, Andy Dalton, after his rookie year, there was no question who was going to be the starting quarterback the next year. They didn't come into the draft this year saying, we need to go get a quarterback. And so there a lot of times, the way quarterbacks are developed in college football now, you find it's not the old days where they sit on the bench and 2 or 3 years down the road you figure it out. It's much more immediate.
Do you see something in Newton's game that tells you it's still a great big question mark?
He's inconsistent. He's not accurate. You know, I mean, that's what Cam Newton has been. He's got great athleticism. His accuracy is off. He's got great arm strength, but consistency, he does not have.
He played very well the second half of last year. He had a rough first half. He played good football the second half.
His body language is bad.
Maturity-wise, I agree. But as far as what he does between the white lines, he's pretty dang good.
Nah. I'm not buying that cup of soup.
Well, you're in the minority because I would guess if you ask most people.
How many games did they win last year?
They were a terrible team. They had no defense.
Bad quarterback play.
No, they did not. Go look at the second half of the year.
No.
You have no idea. You're making this up.
I'm not making it up. I watched Cam Newton.
So I watched him in person.
He's great at times. And then at other times you go, you got to be kidding me. You can't build around that guy. I mean, that's the impression
nuts.
You get.
You're crazy. They're building around Cam Newton. That's what they're doing.
And I don't think you can say that. You got inklings about the three rookies from last year.
Oh, really? You don't know about Andrew Luck?
No, you think he's going to be the guy.
Oh, come on. You're crazy.
But you got to have more than 1 year, baby.
All right. Loggy, thanks so much.
Defensive end speaking.
Tony, Mark, Joe, John, Have a great night, everybody. Thanks for listening to Jaguars Thursday here on Jaguars Radio.